This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a stage drama that explores issues of skin color within the city's African-American community, an exhibit of New Orleans-inspired paintings by an iconic musician, or a Tony Award-winning musical, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Life in New Orleans unfolds on stage in award-winning native playwright Jackie Alexander's The High Priestess of Dark Alley, opening this week at Le Petit Theater. The drama, set in the city's 7th Ward, explores issues of intraracial divisions within the African-American community. Joining me is playwright Jackie Alexander and acclaimed actress Jeanne Michel, a.k.a. G. Tucker. Welcome.
Thanks.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Jackie, you are back with another work following last year's Brothers from the Bottom, which starred New Orleans native Wendell Pierce. What was the inspiration for this work, The High Priestess of Dark Alley?
Well, I always attempt to start with a universal story, and then everything I write is either set in New Orleans or based in New Orleans. Dark Alley is actually referencing the Lafitte Projects. The play is set on Orleans Avenue. That's where I lived. We lived on Orleans Avenue across from the Lafitte Projects. And Dark Alley was a nickname that I would hear people use for the projects. So that's where the title came from. The High Priestess, you got to see the show to really get the full meaning of where the High Priestess come from.
So is this a serious drama, a comedy?
It's definitely a drama, but it is laugh out loud funny. You know, people tend to shy away from heavy subjects, and we tackle some fairly heavy subjects.
So let's set the stage. What's the storyline?
Two sisters doing battle with their domineering mother over the men they love.
So, G, you play a domineering mom?
Can you imagine that? Yeah, Celeste Thibodeau is twice married. The first marriage was to the girl's father for 27 years. And since his death, married to another gentleman. And she seems, like we all do as women in real life, pick the same kind of man. You know? So she quietly suffers because of the choices that she makes in men who love women. She's just a willful woman who is accomplished, as you want to say, as a mother, but I tend to believe that she has been taken care of all her life by both husbands. She loves both daughters very, very much, but she has a very contentious daughter that most characters in the play thinks is very much like her. But I find that both girls are like her. One is more quiet, the other is much more feisty. So without giving away too much, it's a charming real-life experience that gives you a flavor of New Orleans that is rich and full of reality.
What are the themes being explored in this drama?
Faithfulness, spirituality, mm-hmm. The intraracial divisions within the African-American community.
Means what?
Light skin versus dark skin. You know, that divide that can be created by that. I always found it troubling, so I kind of explored how it came to be. The mother in this play, again, really loves her daughter, but she brings with her some ideas that are hurtful, damaging to the family and to society.
Many of the old folk that I've experienced, ladies in my family, were ladies like the character that I play. You know, let's be real. Back in the day, I had a grandmother who said to me, don't bring her any black grandchildren. And that's an issue. And you say, well, why? But for a long time, though many Afro-American people owned property, big time in this city, in the 9th Ward, as well as in other areas of the city. But still there was a division between races, and there was greater opportunity, obviously, for people who were of high yellow color, because they could passer blanc, they could cross the color line. And it is unfortunate that it existed, but it afforded many of them the opportunity to have businesses that they would not ordinarily have had, and to have access to funds that they may not have ordinarily had. You know, banking is an issue for Afro-American people even today. So you can't blame them for the pursuit of happiness that would bring them economic wealth. So
that's a key word, because it also deals with placing judgments based on someone's economic or social status. The two male love interests of the daughters are working class, but they're both men of very high character. We tend to put labels on people by the way they look and what we automatically perceive them to be before listening to what they have to say.
Judging that book by its color.
Yeah.
You know?
This is a subject matter that we're not accustomed to seeing on stage when it comes to African-American drama.
And that's what disturbs me about the industry when they remake so many shows that they've made over and over again. New Orleans is rich in stories that are still untold.
What attracted you to the role?
I've been a business person for 20 years and came to New Orleans and walked away from my career in Hollywood. So I always said, if Hollywood wanted to find me, it's going to have to find me down here. Little did I know we would become Hollywood South.
No. You are known by several names to your fans. We know you as G. Tucker, Jeanne Michel, and
Geneva Leona Mercadel. I am a Mercadel by birth. My mother and father had the Barber and Beauty Salon on St. Anthony Street in New Orleans, and I must have about 10 billion relatives. I'm told by the Creole historian that we're probably the oldest Creole family in New Orleans and probably related to everybody on both sides of the fence. So, you know, it's been a pleasure to come back home and to find my career again, to reinvent myself again as an actress after federal contracting. This is a pleasure, and this is my true love.
Why was it important to bring this issue to light?
I was pushed to writing by my mentor, Weldon Irvine, who penned the lyrics to Be Young, Gifted, and Black. And it came out of a conversation of me complaining about the stories that were being told about African Americans, not being happy with what was out there. Mm-hmm. His answer to me was, stop whining and create your own stories if you're not happy with what's out there. So I decided to make that my focus.
What conversations do you think will be started?
Hopefully a woman will walk out of this and find her strength or see herself on stage and say, you know what, no more.
The lessons learned from this particular play is such a slice of life. A real slice of life.
Playwright Jackie Alexander and actress Jeanne Michel, who we all know as G. Tucker. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
The darker the berry, the sweeter the juice, huh?
The High Priestess of Dark Alley, with an original score by Ed Anderson of Blue Orleans, opens Thursday at Le Petit Theater, 616 St. Peter Street. Performances run through July 24th. Over in Mid-City, the New Orleans Museum of Art is displaying more paintings from Bob Dylan in the Great Hall. Yes, that Bob Dylan. The museum opened the first half of the exhibit in April to coincide with Jazz Fest. The second and final part of the exhibit is now open. Eileen Fleming has more.
Everybody knows this guy.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him? Yes, and how many seas must a white dove see before she sleeps in the sand?
Of course, that's Bob Dylan, but the show highlights his work on canvas.
There's a certain quality that the tonalities that he's choosing to work with are very subdued, you know, grays, whites, blacks, browns, very muted kind of palette. The brushwork is quite minimal, but they're very descriptive of and evocative of a particular mood.
That's Lisa Rotondo McCord, curator at the New Orleans Museum of Art's show on Dylan's painting. The pieces are still arriving at the museum from around the world, and the staff is still designing the outdoor banner. She outlined the ideas behind the exhibit from her office in the museum basement.
How did this Bob Dylan show come about? When did that start to be discussed here as a possibility?
We've been talking about it for a little over a year. I believe there was an exhibition in Milan of this series. and the New Orleans series. And some of our board members and trustees heard about it. Some of them saw it. So various people within the Noma family kind of became aware of his work that focused on New Orleans around the same time. And so then through various means, we have been in communication with his representatives and talking about the possibility of having the show here. And it just didn't coalesce until very, very recently. So,
was it always aimed at Jazz Fest to time it with Jazz Fest?
It really was serendipitous. We were talking about a number of different time frames, but it seemed as though we could do it this year. And if we were going to do it this year, we wanted to make sure that it coincided with the festival season.
Tell me about what's going to be in the Great Hall. How many pieces? Where do they come from?
Sure. So the exhibition is actually going to be divided into two parts. So the Great Hall, when the exhibition opens on Friday, will have 8, possibly 9, depending on the layout, of the 23 paintings that are part of the series. We're able to show 17 of those paintings. Some of them are in private collections, others are in the collection of the artist, others in the collection of his gallery. So we'll have 7, 8, 9 in the first rotation and then the remainder in the second.
When did he start painting?
So there's an early album cover that he painted. I don't remember the year, but it was decades ago. And then he has always, I guess, sketched, and I'm not sure if he continued to paint throughout his career. I suspect he has. But this New Orleans series is one of a number of thematic paintings and drawing series that he's done in the last 20 years. So he worked on a series that's called Drawn Blank, and that was sketches originally. So as he traveled throughout the world, as he performed, living different places, he did a series of sketches over a 10-year period. And he was talking about this work and showed it to a curator in Europe. She saw it, was really impressed, and wanted to do an exhibition. So there was an exhibition of those drawings initially. And then a number of years later, he was able to translate those sketches into paintings, which is evidently how he originally thought of them. He thought of them as preparatory sketches for a series of paintings.
Has he spoken about New Orleans? What is it about New Orleans that served as his muse?
Well, he's written at least the first volume of his autobiography, which is called Chronicles. And there are a number of passages in the book about New Orleans. And probably the most famous one is when he says, there are many places I like, but I like New Orleans better. So I believe that for maybe in the 80s, early 90s, that he was here a lot.
Is it unusual for a musician to be proficient in a totally different form of art?
I don't think it is. I think we just tend to categorize people by one media. So we think of, if you're a singer, you're a singer. If you're an actor, you're an actor. We don't think of the many, many ways that very creative people manifest that creativity. So I don't think it's particularly unusual. It's just that many of those artists choose not to share their work in other realms.
Any chance that he will come?
That I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, actually, but I have no idea. So,
well, if you post them, they he will come.
He will come. That's right. I hope so. I would hope so. I'd hope he'd enjoy. I'm sure he'd enjoy seeing his paintings here. It's obviously a city he loves and a place he enjoys being, but obviously he travels a lot and performs a lot. So I don't know if his schedule will allow a visit here, but we certainly hope so.
Lisa Rotondo McCord, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
The Bob Dylan exhibit runs through July 31st at the New Orleans Museum of Art. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. the 6-time Tony Award-winning musical Thoroughly Modern Millie by Janine Tesori, Dick Scanlon, and Richard Morris continues Summer Lyric Theater's season. The musical, based on the 1967 film of the same name, tells the story of a small-town girl who makes her way to the Big Apple with her sights set on marriage, for money, not love. Joining me now to talk about this musical comedy is Summer Lyric's artistic director, Michael McKelvey, and actress Brianna LaTrash, starring in the title role. Welcome.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you so much.
This is a production about the exuberance of youth as a young woman ventures into the world with big expectations. Why did you choose it for this season?
It had never been done at Summer Lyric. It's a show that I think is part of the standard repertoire now for the American musical. So I figured it was time. Plus, we put a theme on this season. So it's a season of adventure. And then Millie just made sense to me. Little girl, big city, all that thrown at her, and actually her journey to find love or whatever those aspirations are from the beginning of the show to the end. So, yeah, it just seemed like a logical fit for us.
So let's set it up. What's the adventure here?
So this girl named Millie Dilmount comes from Salina, Kansas, and makes her way to the Big Apple. It's her first time ever seeing New York City, and her goal is to marry rich and powerful, and along the way, some things happen, and I think that those dreams and aspirations change from what she initially had set up for her.
And what attracted you, Brianna, to this production?
This is actually one of my dream roles. It has been since like the 6th or 7th grade, when I probably shouldn't have been playing this character. But when I heard that they were doing it, I actually submitted a video because I'm not from New Orleans originally.
Where are you from?
I'm from right outside of Washington, D.C., Alexandria, Virginia. And I go to school actually in Cincinnati, Ohio, at the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music.
When did you get into theater, and how did you know that it would be your life's passion?
I grew up in a dance studio, like, since the first grade, and they kind of transitioned into musical theater late in the game, so I didn't start participating in a musical until, like, the 9th grade. So from 9th grade to 12th grade, I kind of had to quickly realize that this is what I wanted to do, and I got a little more serious.
Now, this production was based on a 1967 film, but it actually goes a little further back, 60 years ago, to a British musical, Chrysanthemum. Mm-hmm. Does it differ much from the original?
A little bit. I think just because of our ideas about culture and our conventions here as Americans, and really it centers for us in the 1920s during Prohibition. So the things that are in it that are very American that have been stuck in. So we get that whole 1920s vibe with the show. Chrysanthemum really doesn't have the same extent because it's British to begin with. But also we get this idea about the change in cultural norms at the time and the evolution of feminism, so to speak, because Millie is what we call a modern. So she's breaking that stereotype of the meek little housewife and things like this. And here is a young independent woman stepping out on her own and is going to change what's going to happen with women. These women who were striking out, so to speak, in the 1920s and letting the female voice be heard. And that's very important to this particular show. Chrysanthemum, I'm not as familiar with. That way I know the character is still strong-willed and independent, but I know with the movie, with the film version and this version, that's to me the benchmark of it. Strong young women making their voice be heard in a man's world.
There are some that say that there are stereotypical images in this particular production that put the Asian community in a poor light. And also the subject matter is pretty heavy, the white slavery ring.
Yeah, we dealt with this, with doing this production. And especially after the Gilbert and Sullivan Society of New York just had a major fracas with their production of Mikado when they were advertising that and people were appearing on their advertisements in quote-unquote yellowface. So there is a character in our show who we could say appears in yellowface. She's a Caucasian actress who is disguising herself as an Asian in order to kidnap women and send them to the Orient to basically go into white slavery. It's part of the movie. It's part of the musical. I personally don't think it's painting the Asian community in a bad stereotype, because the two Asian characters in our production are both very strong and I think are kind of, in their own way, showing this woman up who thinks she's getting won over on them. I personally gave it a lot of thought before we did this show.
And Brianna, what are you bringing to the role of Millie?
Because it's from the 1920s, you know, this is a woman who's definitely breaking the stereotype of what's normal. And I think that I'm having a lot of fun getting to play someone so strong.
What are some of the classic songs we'll hear?
One of the ones that most people know if you're into musical theater is Gimme Gimme. And Forget About the Boy is another big one.
Not for the Life of Me,
which opens the show. And another one that a lot of people know, Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yeah. What about the costumes, the props?
Oh, they're so beautiful.
We've brought in Glenn Breed, who is a costume designer from Florida. We rented part of the production from Music Theater Wichita, but Glenn's been able to transform that original design and really give it this beautiful 1920s flair. The costumes really pop under his design and guidance. Rick Paul's set is great, it's fun, it's functional. Yeah, we're really excited about all the design elements of the production.
What do you hope will be most memorable?
The dancing. Chris Carey, who's been a leading man with Summer Lyric for the past 15 years, beautiful baritone voice. Chris is dancing. And I think our audience is really going to say, oh my God, Chris Carey can move. Look at that man. Summer Lyric has always been known for great singing, beautiful sets and costumes, and the fact we use a full orchestra for every production. Millie's a show that I think explodes off the stage. I'm glad this is my debut production.
I just hope that they take away one of the big messages of the show, that kind of love conquers all. I think that that is something a lot of people are going to like.
Actress Brianna LaTrash and Summer Lyric's Artistic Director Michael McKelvey. Thanks.
Thank you.
Summer Lyric Theater presents Thoroughly Modern Millie, opening Thursday with performances running through Sunday in Dixon Hall on the Tulane University campus. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.